Welcome, everyone, to the Babylon Bee Interview Show. Today, we are talking to Dallas Jenkins.
That's right.
You may know him as the creator of The Chosen.
Of the Jenkins Jenkinses.
Of the Jenkins, the Jenkins dynasty.
Jesus. Yeah.
The Jenkinses. And me and Jared are going to be talking to Dallas Jenkins. He was kind enough to come all the way out here to our studio, and it was just a fantastic conversation. Talked about creativity and Christianity, Christian movies, which ones are good, which ones suck.
Which ones are not so good.
The making of The Chosen.
Right.
What season did you say they're working on now? They're working on
On season three right now.
Yeah. And so it's really cool. We also tried to get Jared a job.
That's right. So season four, I'm still holding out for Pontius Pilate.
Okay.
That's
yeah. So you'll get to see us pitch Jared's acting ability in real time to Dallas Jenkins, which was wonderful. No, but it was a great conversation.
Yeah.
We roamed all over the place in terms of topics, and it was wonderful.
It was great. He's a great guy.
If you like The Chosen, if you like any of the old Left Behind stuff, you get some inside scoop with what went on with...
We do talk about Nick Cage, too. Yeah,
and lots of Nicolas Cage discussion. So
lots of Nicolas Cage.
Here we go. Let's talk to Dallas Jenkins. So are you named after the city in Texas or the American primetime television soap opera that aired on CBS from April 2, 1978 to May 3, 1991?
You guys are so young. So I was born before the show.
Okay.
So I was first.
Okay.
So, but I was actually named after the city.
Okay.
Because my dad, in 1972, rededicated his life to Christ, which is the term we use in evangelicalism for kind of that rebirth. At Expo 72, which is a really famous event that they had at the Cotton Bowl back when the Jesus movement was happening. And so when I was born in 1975, I'm 46 now.
Should we get you a cane to wave while you tell these old stories?
Yes.
Back in 75.
Yeah. I was there for the season premiere of Dallas.
And you caught the 70s. How were they?
Yeah, I was the first four years of my life, I experienced the 70s.
It was wild.
It was a wild time. It was a wild time.
The 70s were crazy.
And then Reagan got assassinated, and our innocence was lost.
Yeah.
And at 5 years old, I knew.
You knew. I was going to be a director.
Yeah. You guys are prepared.
Did your dad ever do anything of note? Or?
Mm-mm. No, he's just sitting back watching me succeed.
Yeah.
Oh,
that's right.
Yeah. He's living vicariously.
Like, yeah, exactly. Yeah, it took you guys a while to make fun of The Chosen,
mm-hmm.
But you were making fun of Left Behind pretty early on.
Yeah, very early on.
And my dad wrote Left Behind back in 92 or 93, somewhere around there. I was in college when that started to explode. And then I graduated from college and went to work as a secretary for the company that was going to make the Left Behind movie.
Okay.
And right as they were about to make the movie, I'd been working there for about 3 years. My dad and I felt like it wasn't going to go in the direction we had hoped.
Okay.
And so we started our own thing. And so I actually worked for them for 3 years and then didn't get to be part of the making of the movie.
Yeah, I think...
So that was the... I'm sorry. That was the Left Behind movie that actually ended up getting made. The first one.
The Kirk Cameron one.
The Kirk Cameron one.
Yes.
Okay.
I worked for the company out of Kentucky. They got the rights to the books.
Right.
And we're developing them. And then right as they were getting ready to make the movie, I left and my dad and I started our own thing. The Kirk Cameron movies got made. And then the Nick Cage one.
That's right.
A few years ago. And now the Kevin Sorbo one is being made.
Oh, is that coming out too?
It's being made right now.
Have you ever thought about remaking The Thief in the Night?
I think Left Behind is a remake of The Thief in the Night. But no, I actually, it is very much on my radar. To potentially do a Left Behind show, because I do want my dad to experience a good Left Behind before he dies.
Yeah, I think the first Bee article we did about it was thrift stores and landfills will no longer accept Rapture fiction.
Yeah.
And your dad commented on it or shared it or something.
Yeah.
And that was the most surreal moment for me,
yes.
You know, early on, like, wow, these books that I grew up with and this guy's talking about it.
Yeah, I know. He loved that kind of stuff. And you guys did one about Trump building his wall with Left Behind books, which was a little bit more of a dig. But 70 million copies sold, I think he could take it.
I mean, there's a lot out there. I mean, I think I got all my copies at a thrift store.
Yeah.
There was a whole section.
We pre-ordered all of them and waited, and we got them on release day. So, we got you beat there.
We got them. We have a cabin close to where Tim LaHaye used to have his cabin.
Yeah.
That's interesting, yeah.
For real?
Yeah, for real. Yeah. Yeah, so anyway.
Now, did your dad ever play rapture pranks on you growing up?
Or do you have a good story where...
When it was considered if you went to evangelical college in the 90s and the Left Behind book started to really take off, there was kind of this common joke about like, we should, someone walk into the cafeteria and there's only clothes, in the cafeteria. And there was a Christian comedian who did a punked, do you remember the show Punked on MTV?
I do.
A punked style prank on this girl where they did something like that, where she walked into the cafeteria and like there were a bunch of clothes there. And at first she was just confused and she started to take it seriously. And it was like, so I know you were joking, but it's not that like people did that.
That's terrible. Then she had a heart attack and died. It's a terrible story.
That's like, but we went to heaven because she believed in the rapture. Yes.
So Emma's brother-in-law has commented on The Chosen, and he says, I cry every episode. The way you portray Jesus makes me feel like he truly would be my best friend, and he would also rebuke all my bad habits. Do you have any thoughts on that?
See, here's the thing. That's actually a sweet comment. Yeah. So you got this like Bible on B smirk on that makes me go, what's the
it's because it's a weird thing to say like this, see this girl over here, her brother-in-law said this.
Yeah. Yes. So
that's the joke.
So like how snarky do I get towards one of the fans of the show saying something so beautiful?
We can say the funny things. You can
That's fine. I think that's a lovely comment. But what was the last sentence about rebuking?
He said that Jesus would be my best friend and also rebuke all of my bad
habits.
All
of my bad habits, yes.
Yeah. That part I'm not so sure of, but...
You don't think Jesus would rebuke all somebody's bad habits?
Not immediately.
Like, maybe eventually.
Before
the judgment seat.
So they all have this accent. Mm-hmm. Is that an accent that you guys made up? Is it an accent that you found in the Holy Land? Is there a particular place that you guys are getting that from?
Yeah, that's a good question. There's a Middle Eastern accent, kind of with the rolled R and the hard vowel sounds and whatnot. But there's so many different ones that our approach to it was: we do want an accent because we do want it to feel a little bit authentic, even though obviously they're speaking English, which isn't authentic. But we didn't want to go full Passion of the Christ where they're speaking Aramaic.
Right.
But we didn't want to go pure American accent. We also didn't want to go the typical British thing. But what I say to the actors that come on board is find whatever Middle Eastern accent you want, just keep it consistent. And so you hear different accents on the show, but they're all we try to keep them consistent within each character.
I notice the Romans are often either American accents or they like just typical American accents, or they're British.
So there's one guy who had a British-y accent, I think, but otherwise it's what we call transatlantic, which is actually it's just formal. You can listen to tapes of like FDR, where he spoke, and it's how they used to speak in high society.
Like Hollywood, too. It's like mid-Atlantic, transatlantic, right?
But around the turn of the century, you'll hear tapes of everything is very formal, and everything is rounded, and it's just... proper way. And so I really did want to differentiate between the Jews and the Romans, and everything Roman from their dress to how they walk to how they talk is very formal. And so we try to showcase the differences in that region. But the region was actually a melting pot. Capernaum was a trade route, so you got a lot of different accents and colors. So you'll see different shades of olive or brown or black in the skin of the actors.
We do have a question about diversity among the disciples. Did you want to ask that question?
Yeah, they're all Jewish males.
Yeah, there's a problem with. I mean, there's not a lot of diversity.
Maybe you could add some diversity
amongst
in future seasons.
The disciples.
Yeah, there's for sure Jewish privilege on our show.
There's so much Jewish privilege on the show.
It's they are Jewish males. We have added. There's women in the among the followers. Three of them now. Yeah. By the end of season two.
Is that like a reboot, like Peter is now gender swapped and... or is that
the it's not swapped, it's now they. It's
just they. Yeah. He's identifying. Yeah. That's the new season.
But seriously, you watch old depictions of Jesus, you watch old Jesus shows, and it's all British white guys, the blonde, wavy hair.
Yeah.
And you kind of push back against that, which I thought was pretty cool.
Yeah, and it's really not, we get asked about that often, and it's not because of any statement we're trying to make, it's just we're trying to be authentic.
Right.
It's literally... like the reason you do it. And I think that's something that you could smell when you watch Jesus projects. I mean, I grew up on them, I'm sure you have too. And they all, I shouldn't say all, a lot of them felt the same. They just, Jesus looked like he had come out of the stained glass window of the local Catholic church or the statue. And so we were just saying, we just have to have it feel as authentic as possible. And I think another thing is, When The Passion of the Christ came out and was not only not white British Jesus, but was like ethnic looking, and then they spoke Aramaic. I mean, they didn't even speak a language you could even understand. And it still was hugely impactful. And I think because of how real it felt and how connective it felt, in many ways kind of opened the door for us to not feel like, well, you know, real quick, if you remember the movie Exodus came out, and they cast Christian Bale and
Russell Crowe.
He was in Noah.
Oh, he was the Noah guy.
There was the other guy that I'm blanking on his name.
Joseph Fiennes.
But he's really good.
I'm Nicolas Cage.
Yeah, Nicolas Cage.
Just keep going. Just keep. This will be really interesting for
Bruce
people.
Willis. Bruce Willis.
It wasn't any of those folks. But
Will Smith, Chris Rock,
Brad Pitt.
I was just about to say, I'm like, you're going to now go to any current hot button.
I'm sorry, we'll let you
It was the guy who played Ramses in Exodus.
Ray Fiennes.
I'm ready to move on. It's
Joel something.
Yes, Joel Edgerton.
Got you.
But they said they cast those guys because you're like, you know, internationally, and especially here in the States, you're just not gonna get the audience if you don't do stars. And typically that tends to be true, but I think for us, it worked to our advantage, kind of the authenticity brand that we were really leaning into. I think it worked to our advantage to not have stars, to not have white people, to just go straight for who's the best for the role.
And how do you find actors? Like, are people hesitant to be part of this kind of religious-themed project? Where do you find actors? Did you know that Jared is an actor?
I am.
Not on The Chosen. I don't see that happening to you. You're a little white.
Well, there are Roman parts.
They shut you down.
Are you actually an actor?
I am.
Yeah, he actually
is. Okay. I actually am.
I'm not trying to be awkward here. I'm just mentioning it on the side.
I am in town because
Kyle, that's really awkward.
the main reason I'm in town is casting, actually, right now.
So really?
We're casting tomorrow.
And so you have to find talent out here, typically? And
You want to find, it's good to find locals, too, just because of travel and all that kind of stuff. So when we film in Dallas, we have some local talent. But majority of them come from LA. And there's never been an issue with the content. In fact, I would say the majority of our cast and crew aren't believers.
That's cool.
They really like the script. I think a lot of people say this about the show. It doesn't feel like a Christian show, even though it's literally about Christ.
Yeah.
But it's a portrayal of first century Galilee and this man who changed the world. And we're just trying to be authentic to it. And I think a lot of people have been just like, because they like the writing, because they like the character that they get to play. It's just never been an issue.
Yeah, Jesus is a believer.
He's a practicing Catholic.
He's a practicing Catholic. A lot of Catholic Jesuses around. Hmm. I guess Jim Caviezel.
Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah, that's true.
Catholic Jesus. That's because they haven't heard of the second commandment.
Oh, that's
not
right.
To portray Jesus. Do you ever get criticism?
we get that.
From the big-time reformers?
Yeah,
reform folks?
Reform folks don't mind that. We're actually...
Dan's a reform guy. He's
Yeah, we've gotten
He's kind of an iconoclast.
Yeah.
Yeah, the reform guys have been pretty cool with the show. It's there has been a few people super just like, you shouldn't even portray God on any level, and because Jesus is God, you shouldn't portray him. But that's paled in comparison to some of the other... criticisms we've gotten, so that's been a minor one.
Okay. Yeah.
What is the biggest criticism? I'm interested you say that.
From the content of the show itself, obviously from people who haven't seen it, because they won't, is just the fact that we're showing things that weren't in scripture.
Creative.
So taking creative license. People who like the show, we had a scene in season two where Jesus is off by himself and the disciples come up to talk to him and he's kind of going over some sermon thoughts in his head. Like he's kind of working out how to phrase something and he's kind of struggling with it. And it was like 10 seconds long and it was by far our number one. Like there was a few people who were really upset because they would say Jesus would never, you know, struggle to find the words for anything. He was God. He knows everything.
He never prepared
that message. That's a theological
question. I've never prepared a sermon. He knew what to say at all times.
Never thought through it.
Yeah.
That's very interesting.
So it is interesting. And I don't think the people who disagree with me on it are crazy. I think what I don't like is their contention that they've solved that riddle. Yeah. Like in a YouTube comment, they can solve 2,000 years of debate about the whole God-man, you know, hypostatic union question.
Well, and some people say that Dan thinks I'm a heretic, but I think that Jesus like didn't know things at times.
Yeah.
You know, because like if you read the scriptures as this narrative, there's times where he's asking questions or he doesn't know something and he has to find it out. And it's weird to me that if Jesus is fully a man, he's a baby and he knows he's God. How is that being a human baby? I don't know.
Yeah, no. And
do I have to put money in here, Dan?
No, that's Philippians.
I think this is
I was just about to say Philippians is what I is kind of where I go, where he did not see equality with God as something to be grasped. And he put aside some of his godness.
Right, and it's the extent, and can he give up an attribute? Is omniscience an attribute that he can give up, or can he voluntarily set aside the exercise?
But the key question is, so you just brought it up. He asked questions at times when he said, "Where is Lazarus buried?" By the way. Or when the woman with the bleeding, the issue of blood grabbed, and he said, who touched me? I believe he was telling the truth.
Yeah.
I believe he didn't know. Mm. He was looking around, who touched me? And I think that if you are someone who believes Jesus knew everything at all times and knew everyone's thoughts, then at best you're thinking that Jesus was just pretending to not know certain things.
Right.
And I just, that's hard for me to grasp.
It doesn't set right.
Yeah. So, but it's an interesting question I love the conversation, but that's been the number one thing from the show that bothered people was that 10 seconds of sermon prep.
Now, The Chosen has been compared with shows like Game of Thrones, like in terms of buzz and format and like just that this is like a well-produced, you know, kind of limited series every time it comes out each season. Mm-hmm. Do you have any plans to just completely ruin it in season 7 and 8? Or have Jesus just like destroy everybody on a dragon or something like that?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. We've talked about how we have gotten to a place where we could troll people so bad.
It's super hard.
Because there's so many things that people now who've seen the first two seasons and really love it and even find a lot of spiritual nourishment from it. Like for a lot of people around the world, they have said, this brought me back to the Bible. Oh. This has brought me back to Christ. And I don't typically think about that. Like when I'm writing, I'm not thinking I'm responsible for the spiritual life of millions of people. I don't think that. But there is a weight to it to some extent. Sure. You know, you don't want to screw it up. But when you think about the ways you could, it is kind of fun to think of like just Jesus.
Those are things
like season 6, he just, you know, on the cross turns to the camera and he's like, the Mormons were right. You know? Yeah, just something, because I work with some LDS folks and so they already hate me for it. So I'm like, maybe I could just go all in and just totally, like, just ruin people.
So you're not denying Jesus on a dragon season 8.
It's being workshopped.
Jesus maybe coming to America in season 8.
So that's funny.
After the resurrection.
Maybe. So that's funny because I was on the set. You know, the set that we've used and will continue to use at times for the show is owned by the LDS Church. And I was visiting there for the first time, checking it out. And there was this section that had all this like kind of Native American design on it. And I didn't know the history of this part of the church. And I said, oh, what's this? And they said, this is where we filmed the Book of Mormon. We're filming some of the Book of Mormon videos. And this is, and I go, oh yeah, well, what's with the Native American stuff? And they said, oh, this is when Jesus came to the Americas. And I said, I'm sorry, what?
Yeah, you're like wait a minute.
And so we had this, they were kind of educating me on it. And I thought, okay, good to know.
Good to know.
All right, we're going to shoot over here.
but on this side.
No, but it was really cool, and it was really fun. It was really fun to learn. But yeah, the whole Jesus coming to the Americas thing didn't register until about 2 years ago.
Yeah, so Angel Studios, I know some of the people you work with are members of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. We should come up with a shorter word.
LDS.
To describe them.
Yes. there was one for a long time, and everyone was cool with it, Mormon, but no longer.
I hate that we keep asking you about criticism because it's like, what's your greatest weakness? But have you faced criticism for partnering with members of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints? How much do members of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints influence theology? Are you in complete creative control? How many members of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints have you converted?
You're reminding me of like when you're using your GPS or Waze and it says in 1 mile take an exit on, and it's got like six different titles and then they repeat it every single time and it's so annoying. That's what came to mind.
Turn left.
I'm glad I'm being annoying.
So let me start with, yes, we've gotten a lot of criticism for the fact that I work with members of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. They have zero influence on the content. And they say that themselves, the people that I work with. No affiliation at all with the church formally. We're not affiliated with any denomination, any faith tradition, any religion at all. And nor is anyone affiliated with us. And then your last one was, what was that?
I'll repeat it for you.
No, just the second part.
Please, Lord, no.
How many members of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints have you converted?
That I will not answer. But it has been actually a really wonderful experience, actually getting to know so many people, and to also talk about the differences of the different faith traditions, including the things on which we vociferously disagree, has been really fascinating. And there has been, among people of other religions, Catholicism, LDS, whatnot, who have been really intrigued by the Chosen, because if they didn't know any better, they wouldn't have thought I'm an evangelical. Like, in fact, I've had talked to Catholics who assumed it was a Catholic show because the show reflected their faith so much. Because when you think about the Gospels, there's not very much other than Mary that Catholics, evangelicals, and even LDS folks disagree on when it comes to Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. Mm-hmm. You know, like the theology differences usually come based on things from, you know, way before then or way after then. But like the stories of the Gospels, there's not much disagreement. So an LDS person watches the show and goes, I love this show. This is great. This is exactly the Jesus that I love. Same as the Catholics. But what they're finding is as an evangelical, I tend to be, you know, less quote unquote religious, obviously. That's kind of our thing, is no structure, kind of a very libertarian approach to church. And we're finding that a lot of people who previously were more comfortable in a structured religious setting are finding themselves really, like, finding the love of a personal relationship with Jesus.
Yeah.
You know, that doesn't necessarily cause them to give up their religion, but just it becomes more personal than it had been.
And that's really interesting. I've been working in the industry a bit, and I've been working a lot with Catholics, like, lately. Yeah. And I'm finding that they are way more, like, even free with their relationship with Jesus than some of the folks that I've known that are Protestants, like, over my years. And they seek the Lord about everything. They ask the Lord's opinion about everything.
Or the saints. They ask the Lord or the saints.
Now, these guys, man, that's it. You probably know them. You probably know these guys. But they're really sweet guys. Yep. But they seek God on every issue. And I'm just, like, amazed by it.
Yeah,
and
you sometimes go...
Grow up as an evangelical, you don't...
When you're told...
Expect that.
And you're told they only talk to priests. They never talk to God.
Right.
And then you meet him and you go, oh, they talk to God all the time. And they talk to priests.
Yeah. So we should get priests in our lives. I feel like I need a priest.
I have one.
Oh.
He's a high priest.
He's a high priest. Right. Jesus Christ.
Oh, that's right.
I can introduce you. So do you like movies?
Yeah. Jeez. Yeah, you like.
This is the greatest. Let me say, by the way, I haven't said this yet. I love you guys. I love the Babylon Bee. I love this podcast. I haven't said it. So I wanted to it made me think of it just now, and I want to make sure I say it. But as someone who grew up in the church and as someone who always kind of had a snarky approach to things and loved satire and always kind of was bummed by some of the humorlessness of the Christian space, even the Christian media space, there used to be, I know you guys know this, there used to be the Wittenberg Door, right? Mm-hmm. That was also legitimately funny back, but then it hadn't been too popular for a while. And when you guys came along, I'm telling you, it was such a breath of fresh air. And I mean, once a week, my wife, who's here in the room, I'll text her a screenshot of one of your headlines. And just truly, it is so fun when you find artists that you truly admire and look up to, and you guys fit the bill. So just wanted to make sure I say that. Yes, I like movies.
As you
go
do.
On.
No, we like this. This is really nice.
Yes. But thank you for what you do, and it's truly, truly brilliant.
It's awesome. We're excited about you too. I love The Chosen, and I'm a huge fan.
Oh, I was going somewhere with my movies question.
Oh yeah, we should do that.
So we're gonna ask you to rate some Christian movies.
Very excited.
Now, if you're not comfortable, you know, if you're buddies with these guys, you don't want to slam their movie, that's fine, or you could just lie about them.
I do. I mean, I'm friends with a lot of these guys, but I we'll see what happens. But
so we're gonna rate them between one. One is Noah, and 10, which is Passion of the Christ. So from
So that is that a scale? That's not a scale. That doesn't seem like it's a scale of quality, because Noah was well produced.
We're talking sort of like Christian.
You just mean whether it was.
I don't know. You can make up the scale.
No, one is Noah, and 10 is Passion of the Christ.
Yeah, he's like, Noah, you can't make up the scale. That's what a scale is.
It's an intuitive thing.
So number one is Left Behind, starring Nicolas Cage. Can you not say?
Are you nodding or shaking my head?
My wife is signaling to you.
I say. You can say. I have not been a fan of the Left Behind movies that have been made.
No, none of the ones?
None of them.
Is there a best one or worst
one? I love Nicolas Cage. So
yeah, I mean, how awesome
was
that?
It was awesome. And when my dad, when Left Behind first was written, and we were thinking, like, this is going to be a movie, and thinking of the kinds of actors that you could get, Nicolas Cage would have been... Yeah. In the top five, you know. So I for sure like Nicolas Cage, and his performance was fine. I remember Tribulation Force, which was the second one of the originals, I actually thought was better than the first one. Like, I thought it was, like, not too bad. Mm-hmm. And I love Kirk Cameron. I mean, we're buddies.
Cameron's
like,
fantastic.
Yeah. Nice, he's a great guy. But I'm not a fan of the Left Behind movies.
Okay,
cool. All right, second.
So one, Noah. Okay.
All right. I'm not going to give it a one.
That was on the Noah. Yeah. So, Last Temptation of Christ.
Is it a Christian movie? I guess. Kind
of. I don't think it really counts.
Well. Yeah, that's a weird one. I actually don't think it's that great of a movie. So, like, I thought it was
really setting the theology.
It's just really interesting. Yeah, but I'll give it a three.
Okay. A Christian Mingle.
That's got Lacey Chabert, right?
Yeah.
And she's a friend.
She's in a lot of them, isn't she? She's the one that's in a lot of them?
She's in a lot of Hallmark movies.
Okay, that's what I'm thinking.
And she was actually in my very first movie.
Oh, fantastic.
20 years ago.
So this is a 10, Passion of
the Absolutely, life. I mean, yeah.
What was your first movie?
It's called Hometown Legend, and it was a high school football film set in Alabama it came out in about 2000. It hasn't been out for a year. I mean,
sure.
You wouldn't know it, but
Christians love the football movies.
Yeah, we do.
See, that's the thing. I was the first, though. Like,
was that the
first Kendrick
Christian
brothers actually called me up when they were going to do Facing the Giants and asked for some advice about how to do, like, some of the football scenes and stuff like that.
Oh, that's cool.
So I was the first faith-based football movie. I was the first Stephen Baldwin faith-based movie, and I was the first Kevin Sorbo. Faith-based
movie. All Christian movies we can credit.
Yeah, you can either blame or you. I was telling you earlier. I was like, you can either say thank you or I'm, you know, or I could say you're welcome or I'm sorry, but I always tended to be a little bit too far ahead of the curve.
Okay.
That was my very first one. And Lacey's cool. Great. Christian Mingle was cute. That was a cute movie.
Okay. Cute movie. Sure. All right. Passion of the Christ.
Here's what's interesting. For sure, you can't go wrong with Passion of the Christ. I mean, it's a great... I remember seeing it, and it really impacted me greatly. But I would say that watching it now, it's very, like... When's the last time you saw it?
Probably not since the theaters.
Yeah. It's very, like, operatic. Like, it's very...
Slow motion.
Yeah, very, very melodramatic. And because we're doing something so different with The Chosen, the things that I like about The Passion of the Christ are more the... Like the scenes where he's with his mom and he's splashing water on her and stuff like that. So it's definitely been an influence. But it's not something I just pull out and pop into the DVD player and pull up.
So are you not going to rate it 10, Passion of the Christ?
No, I'm going to say it's definitely a 10 in the sense that it really did change the game.
Sure.
Like it changed the industry. It's been a big influence. When we end up portraying the crucifixion in a future season, spoiler alert, Jesus does die on the cross for our sins, for you and me.
Oh,
yeah. But there are certain things I won't do because Mel already did them, and they're so seared into everyone's minds. Like I can't do the torture porn thing, you know.
Terrible.
So because he did it, and so in many ways I owe a lot to him. But yeah, that's a game changer film. That was like Christians around the world. I don't know if you, how old were you when that came out?
When Passion of the Christ, I was in high school. Yeah. Was it 2004?
Yeah.
It was earlier. Pretty sure it was.
I was in high school, but I don't remember exactly. So.
Yeah.
I saw The Lord of the Dance on the same day.
You're right. Yeah. You saw what?
Lord of the Dance on the same day. Michael Flatley. Yeah, it was not a good performance of Lord of the Dance. I couldn't get over The Passion, so I didn't.
Did you see Lord of the Dance after
yes,
The Passion?
It was already scheduled.
There's no.
We went to a screening with Mel Gibson, and I was like, I just was so just devastated all day that it just ruined Lord of the Dance for me. And I love that crap.
Yeah. Normally, like, note to self: avoid dancing merriment after Lord Passion.
As the Passion and with Michael Flatley.
Yeah, but I think it's 2004, but that was before. I mean, I remember when the trailer for it, there was like a 4-minute kind of sizzle reel of footage that people were emailing each other because YouTube wasn't around.
Right.
And it was
is this the Lord of the Dance or?
And then he became a boxer. Sorry.
But for a year, what they did so brilliantly is they were screening that film that they gave it a whole year to like build up. The anticipation for it. Gosh. But I mean, I don't think people can underestimate or overstate how huge that was at the time.
Yeah, it's almost like you really can't follow that in terms of success either because of the way it was, way that it's kind of the viral way that it spread, and it was just nuts. Yeah, it's hard. Anyway.
What about Revelation Road 2?
Okay, I think we know.
There's now a series, right?
I don't know.
Revelation Road series
with shooting it in
with Christy
South
Swanson,
Africa,
who's a friend of mine.
Oh yeah,
because Christy was in What If?
That's right,
with Kevin Sorbo.
And you directed What If?
Yeah,
that was with Carrie and Chuck. Carrie and Chuck weren't part of that.
They co-wrote that.
That's right, they did, right?
Yep.
Okay,
that's. Right. I have not seen Revelation Road.
Okay. Okay.
So 10. Yes.
So 10. All right. Let's see. God's Not Dead. He's surely alive.
He is.
He's living on the inside.
You can just say nice things if you want.
Well, no, I will say nice things because I believe them. Like Kevin is in that, and Harold Cronk directed it. Who's a close friend and a guy that I knew early on. The guys at Pure Flix, they did What If a little bit before then. I mean, I certainly rooted for God's Not Dead. It's not my kind of movie, so I'm not. It's not really the kind of movie that's made for me, per se. So I can't say I loved it, but I don't believe in crapping on it.
You don't have to be like we trash Christian movies all the time, but there's a sense in which like as things have gotten more and more woke outside, I'm just kind of like, I'm more cool with that.
Yeah.
Like, I'd prefer that you watch God's Not Dead to like all this other stuff.
Well, and also what's the alternative? Should God's Not Dead not exist? I mean, millions of people absolutely loved it.
For sure.
Like I've always been defensive of like the Kendricks and God's Not Dead. Some of it's because I like some of their movies, but some of it's because it's like, even if it's not really my thing, it certainly should exist. Like people's lives were impacted by it. People loved it, and there's a space for it for sure.
There's a major
recognizing you're not part of that market.
It's just not really my kind of movie.
Yeah. No, for sure.
What about Resurrection of Gavin Stone?
Gavin Stone.
It's 1-10.
So what should I say about Resurrection of Gavin Stone? What would I say if I was not
he made the movie, by the way.
The maker of that movie. I would say I'm
what I would say if I say it. So that's a trap for me. But,
yeah. Yeah, this is my wife off
camera. Yeah,
probably can't hear her very well. But I'm very proud of the humor of that movie and the performances in that movie. But one of the reasons why it bombed at the box office is because it shouldn't have been in theaters. I don't think it was I call it a really good Hallmark movie.
Mm-hmm. What year did that come out?
2017.
17. Okay. How did you get the concept for that movie?
So it was an idea that I had heard. I was having lunch with someone and they mentioned this project that they had come across. And I loved the concept. The concept of, and I actually still stand by it. I still like the movie. I think it's very funny. I think the concept is great, which is a guy who was, the concept as they mentioned it to me was child actor, gets assigned, now he's an adult. Kind of down on his luck, gets in trouble, gets assigned community service at a local church, pretends to be Jesus to play. Pretends to be a Christian so that he can play Jesus in their big passion play. And then in the process of playing Jesus, comes to know him more. Yeah, and I think that's a great idea.
It's a great concept.
And I think that we did I think there's a lot of scenes in it that are really funny. I think there's a lot of kind of Babylon B-esque type moments, you know, kind of poking a little fun at church world, but from a heartwarming perspective. But yeah, it was a Hallmark movie, you know.
Yeah, for sure.
I don't think it holds up to the standards of like mainstream theatrical releases, but I think it for sure fits well on Netflix and is doing well on Netflix right now.
Such a weird time. You know, we're shifting from this distribution model where you make another one, like this puts out in theaters, and now there's all these other avenues where things can fit better and find an audience in a different way.
Yeah, like for example, the one of the things that faith-based movies suffer from is what one of the things Resurrection of Gavin Stone suffered from, which is budgets sometimes don't make the difference between whether a movie is good or not. But you're oftentimes using free locations, which then Resurrection of Gavin Stone, you know, we used the church that I worked at, we used all these houses, like everything was free locations because it was set in a church. But what works maybe for a real life church doesn't look good on camera necessarily. So it's very flat, like just the look of the film is flat and there's just nothing kind of cinematic about it, and I think
the actors were good.
Yeah, right. Brett Dalton from Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah, I remember. Yeah, he was good.
And Shawn Michaels, the WWE wrestler, who actually did a good job. Angela Johnson is a great comic. She played the lead female, and then Neil Flynn from The Middle, and the janitor. He was a janitor on Scrubs. So a lot of good things going for it. But it was. We've talked now way too long about Gavin Stone. Let's go back to Revelation Road 2.
I have about seven more questions about Resurrection Gavin Stone. No, I'm just kidding. So you're rating it a 10, Passion of the Christ level. That's what I'm hearing.
Yeah.
Coming up next for Babylon Bee subscribers.
Let's all get canceled right now.
Yeah, it's awesome.
You're developing these characters. It's so awesome. It's so awesome.
You can't allow just a single sincere compliment to break through the barrier of Kyle Snark. I saw Wayne's World like 8 times in the theater.
Oh yeah.
Mike Myers is a huge influence on
I saw Starship Troopers, I think, 8 times.
That's a bummer.
This has been another interview on the Babylon Bee from the dedicated team of certified fake news journalists you can trust, reminding you to go forth and punch Satan right in the face.